Remember the Christmases of your childhood? You were surrounded by twinkling lights, Christmas carols, mangers, candy canes, gifts, excitement, and most of all, hope. We enjoy returning to these symbols and pieces of the Christmas story as we remember the most important part of Christmas, Jesus' birth. We believe that the presence of Jesus in our lives means that hope doesn't have to come around only once a year, because he came to be the hope of the world. Join us at Northgate this Christmas season for a message series called Vintage Christmas.
All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome to Northgate, second week of Advent. Isn't that great? Doesn't that make you feel so like warm and nostalgic? I love it. I've seen it a bunch, and I could keep watching it. We're in a series called Vintage Christmas. We're going to talk about remembering the most important part. It's our annual attempt to try and keep you focused on the right things at Christmas. I don't know if you've caught on, but we do this every year. We spend a month talking about what Christmas really is and what it should be, and we're going to jump in with that this morning. But before we do, I do want to make an announcement to you, and some of you have seen this on Pastor Vern's Top 10 on his blog, and if you don't see that out in the cafe or you don't get it in your email, you can just email the office, which is office@northgatefmc.com, and you can subscribe to that. But in there, he introduced you, he mentioned Pastor Marcia Rivers, who will be starting here at Northgate on January 2nd. I believe we've got a picture of Marcia and her family. And I wanted to just show a picture to them. Now, you know what's cool is I was just thinking like how things work or go around. 9 years ago, Amy and I were at the church that Marcia's attended for most of her life in Albion, being introduced there because we were coming right after the start of the year. And so now I get to introduce Marcia and Tom to you guys. Some of you, a lot of you will recognize Tom. He was with the Batavia Daily for a long time. I've had so many people ask that. Is it that Rivers? It is that Rivers. He does the Orleans Hub now, which is an online source for news in Orleans County. And Marcia she's incredibly gifted and talented. I think she's going to be a really good balance for this team. She's going to bring some things that we don't currently have, and we're really looking forward to her joining us. And her kids are Vivian, who's the oldest. She's a freshman at Houghton, and Reuben, Lucy, and Cordelia's the youngest. She's in second grade. So a really wonderful family. They're going to add a great dynamic. And she starts January 2nd, right after the new year, and we're really excited for this next chapter. And I wanted to make sure you saw their faces so that, I mean, hopefully you welcome everyone nicely, but if you see them come in, just make sure that you make them feel welcome. All right, so if you were here last week, we had a huge honor, a huge privilege of having Mark Buchanan here, a noted author and speaker, and we had him all weekend. We worked him hard, man. We made him work Friday night, did a brunch on Saturday morning, church on Saturday night, twice on Sunday, but it was really great having him here, and he started in Isaiah 8, and he started to unpack some things, and there was a particular word, and I know some of you have already grasped onto this word, and it's nevertheless. And for some of you, that will be your theme word for Advent, or for some people, maybe that's your word for 2018 that you really want to hold on to. And if you don't get that, you got to go back and watch it. You can find it on Facebook or our Instagram or our Vimeo page or website, or you can find it in a lot of places. If you need help, just ask. But he talked about Isaiah 9:6 and about how your name is what's given to you, but then what you're called is really who you are. And in this verse in Isaiah 9:6, it's this prophecy long before Jesus is born, and it tells us that a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called the things that he will become, which is Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. And so last weekend, Mark took a look at the Everlasting Father part. In the upcoming weeks, we're going to look at Wonderful Counselor and Mighty God. And today, I get to look at Jesus as the Prince of Peace. We're going to do them all out of order because we're crazy like that. Like, you never know what we're going to do. We like to keep you guessing. So I get to address Jesus as the Prince of Peace. And Pastor Vern lit a candle for peace this morning. And here's something we all need to understand about the Prince of Peace and about having peace. And that's this, that if you want to find peace, seek contentment. If you're in search of peace, if you're saying, I want peace in my heart, I want that peace that people talk about, I hear people say that, you need to seek contentment because you will not have peace until you find contentment. You won't find it. Until we can learn to be content, whatever the circumstances, we will not find that inner peace that Jesus came to bring. We will not find that inner peace that we desperately want and we desperately need. And I don't know if there's truly a better feeling than contentment. I don't know. I think contentment is one of the best things that you can feel. I mean, think about moments of contentment. I always, especially at this time, I just think about like the post-Thanksgiving meal contentment. You know, when you're so stuffed that you could not eat one more thing, and you've got your family there, and you've got football on, and you're just kind of like, because that's what you do. And you're in a, like, caught on the couch, and you're just like, man, there's nothing that I could need in the world right now. Like, that's such a great feeling, that feeling of contentment. And when we look back and we try and think of those times of contentment, if you consider, when was I really content? Who was I with? Sometimes they're like obvious ones, right? If I think about contentment, Amy and I went on a cruise for our 10th anniversary last year to Bermuda. There's a lot of moments of contentment on a cruise to Bermuda. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to like undersell that, where you're on a beach and it's 80 degrees and you have nothing to accomplish for the entire day. Like, it's pretty easy to be content in those moments. And sometimes those are the moments. But a lot of times, the moments of contentment are much more simple. They're more simple times where you just look back and there's not really anything going on crazy. You're not like in the nicest part of the world or anything. And it's just, you just realize that you're content where you are and with what's happening right now. I had one of those simpler moments just last week because we made the decision to introduce Home Alone to our children. Now, I need to give you a disclaimer. There is some language in Home Alone that I would not say from the pulpit. So if I'm going to talk about the movie, I need you to know that's there. I'm not making that decision for your kids. Ask your doctor if Home Alone is right for your family. Okay? But it was a huge part of my childhood, and I was really excited. I've been like pushing off introducing it to him for the last several years. And so we're watching Home Alone, and during the course of like the robbers just taking a beating, and if you haven't, you had 30 years to watch it, so that's not a spoiler alert. But they're taking this beating, and I look down the couch, and Amy's on the other end, and the three girls are in between us, and they are just laughing hysterically. Like, all of them are just like these huge, deep laughs, and they're like, it was so great. And I just look down, and I watch them laugh for a minute, and I just felt this feeling of contentment of like, what else could I need or could I want in that moment? And those are some of the simpler kind of times where we find contentment. And a lot of times we find it in simple times because contentment cannot be tied to what we have. Contentment can't be tied to that. Contentment can't be only on a beach in Bermuda, because if that's the case, then you're going to spend a lot of time just being discontent. You know, if that's the only time I find contentment in my life, I've got a long time till I'm going to be back there. And when we tie it to something that we have, there's always something else to get. There's always one more thing. I've always been one of the kids and then the adults that felt like I was one more thing away from happiness. And the first real memory I have of this is Christmas 1988, where I was 8 years old. So if I'll save you the math. I'm 37 now, okay? It's really easy. I don't care. So Christmas 1988, 8-year-old me was convinced that I needed this particular train to be happy, to continue in my existence. Take a look at this.
The world's fastest train is taking off. Super Turbo Train with Daredevil Jump travels in scale beyond the speed of sound. So fast, it races up a wall and even upside down. So fast, it makes the incredible Daredevil Jump and keeps on going. There's nothing else like it. Take control of the fastest and only airborne train. The new Super Turbo Train with Daredevil Jump from Tyco.
Yes. Yes. First of all, the claim that it is faster than the speed of sound to scale is probably the least verifiable claim. Like, that'd get killed on the internet these days. Like, to scale, all right. Second, it made that jump like one out of every 7 times. But I was convinced 8-year-old me had to have that. That was like my thing. If I don't get this, it's going to be the worst Christmas. And it was a Sunday Christmas, which meant, because I grew up in a very conservative family, we didn't open presents beforehand, before church. My dad had to milk the cows. He came home. We had breakfast. We went to church. We got to open one present before church. Spoiler alert, my mom picked it out. It was a shirt and tie. Oh, that's great. Go put it on for church. I'm like, no. So then we went to church, which was extraordinarily long that morning, and then we had dinner, and then around like 1:30, I finally got to open my turbo train, and that thing changed my life for like a week. And then I stopped using it, because it's always, there's one more thing. But here's the problem, is that as we get older, toy trains, they turn into new cars, like not literally, but they, what we want, what we think, I just need one more, it turns into a new car, it turns into a bigger house, it turns into a boat, or then it turns into like a nicer boat, and then it turns into an even nicer boat because your friend got a nicer boat than your nice boat, and it's just this unending thing that we chase. And I want you to know, I'm not mad at you if you have a new car, if you have a nice house, or if you have a nice boat. I mean, if you've got a nice boat, I'd actually like to be your friend in like May or June. But here's what I don't want for you. I don't want for you to be trying to hit a moving target of contentment that's based on your possessions. I don't want that for you. And the people here that already know that, they don't want that for you. They would love for you to grasp that, because here's a great secret that some of you know. And a lot of you don't know. Contentment is a choice. Contentment is a choice. And that's a really important thing because contentment is a daily choice that you and I can make when we trust God for what we have and for what we need. And we need to figure this out. We have to figure this out sooner or later because if we can't find contentment, our entire lives will be characterized by restlessness, by coveting, by unease. And some people, sadly, they live their whole lives and they don't realize this till they're on their deathbeds. They don't realize it until the end. They spend their one and only life chasing the next promotion, the newer car, the bigger house, the nicer boat, and they get to the end and they look back and they realize that they've wasted it. And guys, I don't want that for you. I don't want you to waste your one and only life pursuing things that don't really matter. I don't want you to be the kind of people that use people and love stuff. I want you to be the kind of people that love people and use stuff. So we'll find that we can never find contentment by the world's standards. We can only find it where Paul, who's the author of our passage today, found it, and that's in Christ. Because life without contentment is ultimately empty, and it's hollow, and it leaves us chasing after something that we will never actually capture. And if you think about that, if you think about chasing something that you never capture, it's a continually stressful and never satisfying experience. So here's our main point this morning. Go back one. Contentment isn't about what I possess. It's about trusting God more and loving stuff less. Contentment will never be about what you have. It will be about trusting God more and loving stuff less. And Paul is going to introduce that to you because I told you, I'm not mad at you if you've got stuff. I've got stuff. I have a far nicer house than I ever thought I'd have. I have a car that is more than sufficient to get me back and forth to work and to, you know, do take care of that stuff. I've gone on nice trips. I plan on going on nice trips again, and I don't apologize for them. I will teach you how to handle money the same way Amy and I do. We work hard to do that. But I don't ever want to love my stuff. I don't. I don't ever want to love the trips. I don't ever want to trust in what I have and in what I can buy instead of trusting in God. So I'm not telling you that you need to have nothing to find contentment, but I am telling you that having everything won't lead to contentment either. And that's the message Paul would want you to get from Philippians 4, 10 to 20. Here's the passage where this whole thing's there. So if you want to take a second and open it up, you can do that in the Bible or on your app. We're going to read 10 verses in a row, and then we're going to kind of unpack them. Because here's what Paul says in this letter to the church in Philippi. He said, I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I've learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Now just pause right there real quick because Philippians 4:13 might be the most taken out of context verse in the Bible, okay? Paul is saying, I've had a lot of things and I've had none, and what I've learned is that God can actually give me what I need to be content in all these situations. And what we've taken that to mean is I can throw and run for touchdowns. Like, I don't know, somebody's translation went way off with I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. I don't, if that's your verse to get you through finals, I don't want to discourage you, but actually what that verse means is God can teach you to be content whether you do well in your finals or not. It doesn't actually mean don't study for your finals and you can do all things through Christ who gives you the answers that you didn't work for. I feel like that's important to note. Okay, back in here, verse 14. Yet, it was good of you to share in my troubles. Moreover, as you Philippians know, in the early days of your acquaintance with the gospel, when I set out from Macedonia, not one church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving, except you only. For even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent me aid more than once when I was in need. Not that I desire your gifts. What I desire is that more be credited to your account. And then he closes it by saying, I've received full payment and have more than enough. I am amply supplied now that I have received from Epaphroditus the gifts that you sent. They are a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice pleasing to God. And my God will meet all your needs according to the riches of his glory in Christ Jesus. To our God and Father be glory forever and ever. Amen. It's a beautiful passage, probably my favorite passage on contentment, with some really incredible things that we can pull out of there that Paul is telling us about the contentment that he has found in Jesus Christ and how we can find the same thing. And here's the first thing that's early on in that passage. Contentment is a daily choice, not based on circumstances. This is like the groundwork. You've got to get this to get this. Contentment is a daily choice that is not based on circumstances. He said, I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. The definition of contentment is an internal satisfaction that does not demand changes in external circumstances. It's an internal satisfaction that doesn't demand changes in external circumstances. So if we are tying our contentment to the changing of external circumstances, we have a fundamental misunderstanding about what that word really means. If we're saying, I will be content when, we actually don't understand what contentment is. Because true contentment, it's not something offered by this world. Because the world, they see it as a moving target. They see it as something that you can never really hit, something that you'll never really get to, something that you can never really attain. Contentment is always just around the corner. It's one more thing away. I think the most excruciating, grueling race that I've ever done, it wasn't the longest race, it wasn't the hottest race, it was a 5K in Brighton, and it was the first year that they did it. And they didn't really know what they were doing that much. And so we were running, and it was a smaller race, so I was right towards the beginning. Like, there's people in front of me, don't get me wrong. But I was towards the front of the pack, and we're running through, and we run by this one girl who's standing there, just standing there, not saying anything, not pointing any particular direction. And we run past her on the canal, and we get down a ways, and all of a sudden, like, the people up in front start turning around and coming back. And we were, like, a good half mile down the canal, and they're coming back, and they're like, yeah, we missed a turn somewhere. And so then we all have to turn around and run back to the girl who had not mentioned that we should be turning off the canal at that point and heading down. So in my speaker, like the earphones there where it has the racing app, she's saying 5 kilometers completed. And I'm like, I'm done with this race. But I don't even know where the end of the race is. So I just keep running to this target that I can't even hit, this moving finish line. And it was like mental, that's like torture. It was like mentally grueling to not know when the race would end. And that is what we do with contentment when we tie it to buying possessions, is we don't know where the finish line is. So we run and we think, yeah, I'm here, I got this. And then the finish line just keeps moving up. We're like, oh, I got to run some more. I got to keep moving up. And probably the best company at this is one of my favorite companies, and that's Apple. Because Apple has mastered this art. Because last September, if you had an iPhone 7, and I did, you had the best phone ever created. And if you like droids, we don't believe you, so it's fine. Just go with me. But that was the best thing, right? The best thing ever. If you're anybody, you have to have the iPhone 7. And that's awesome. It's the best phone until this fall when the iPhone 8 comes out, and now your 7 is trash. You should be embarrassed to take it out in social situations, right? It's useless. And that's how that works. And the people that had to get the iPhone 8 in September to have the newest phone, they really lost this year because the iPhone X came out like 2 months after that. So I really hope you didn't do that. But that's how that works. And it's this never-ending thing because guess what? The iPhone X will be trash when the next one comes out. And that's how it's going to go if you think you always have to have the biggest and the best thing. If you don't have that idea that contentment is a daily choice that's not based on circumstances. And sometimes people, they just think, well, I don't have enough yet. I haven't learned that because I don't have enough. I remember I was driving my third brand new car that I bought in 5 years back in my early 20s, which is a horrible financial plan, and that's why I teach FPU now, to try and make up for those mistakes in my own life. And so I was driving this car, and my older sister, who's a missionary and had like nothing, she was like, oh, how's your week? I was like, meh. It's all right. She goes, how can it just be all right? You have a brand new car. And I was like, well, you just think that because you've never had a brand new car. It's actually, like, it's okay. It's a car, you know? And I already knew that I wasn't finding any contentment in that possession, but she never had it, so she assumed that it was. And then don't miss this before we move on. The phrase, I have learned. That is really, really important. I have learned. Because for a lot of us, this is probably not our default. Paul didn't say, I was born as an extremely content person, and that's how I've been my whole life. Let me tell you how. No, he said, I've learned to be content. And so if that is your default, if your default is discontentment, as is mine, you have two choices, fight it or feed it. Either fight it and say, I'm not going to give in, I'm not going to chase that, I'm not going to chase a target I can never get, or say, I'm going to feed it, I'm just going to keep buying one more thing, I'm going to keep buying bigger, better, newer, until I finally feel satisfied. Fight it or feed it, those are the only choices. But Paul learned to be content, and we can learn that as well. And here's a big step to learning that, realizing that contentment is all about perspective. He said, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Paul had the perspective of somebody who had had much less and somebody who had had much more, and he knew where to look for that because keeping things in perspective is all about focusing on what we have. not on focusing on what we don't have. And there's a church called Forest Hill Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and they put out this video last year that went almost immediately viral because they nailed this so much. So take a look at a perspective video.
I'm alive! I'm alive!
Yeah?
Yeah! Oh, yeah! Hey, Christine! You're here too! I love you!
I know.
Dad, what's happening?
Honey, the power works! It's coming, it goes on and off! Whatever we want! We've got clean water!
Oh, that's great, look at that!
Ooh! I bet I know what this does!
Rain down the glorious water!
Shoes.
Oh, what do we got here, guys?
Food.
I love food. What? A briefcase? Are you gonna have work? This is awesome. Come on, listen here.
Steve, the what?
Josh, be careful.
Ooh. I have a car. This is grand. Did you guys see this?
Yeah, you have a car.
A car!
And don't forget your coffee.
You're the best.
Yeah, isn't that great? You know what's really cool? Is that Mark and Ruth Logan's daughter, Elise Frazier, she works at Forest Hill. She was one of the producers of that video. So it was really awesome, especially for them to watch as that just exploded. But it makes that point so well. I used every single one of those things in my house this morning, right? I woke up, did all that stuff, had coffee, had breakfast, had a car, and I failed to appreciate any of it, certainly to that degree. And so we have this issue of perspective where we look, and not only, now this won't be true forever, and I don't want to be callous to that, but the vast majority of us have a significant amount of food in our house, right? And we not only have so much food, we have pantries, we have an extra pantry in our basement because we had the extra food down there, and we have all this stuff. We have enough food that we will sometimes look at the food we have and decide we don't want any of that, and we'll go and we'll pay someone else at a restaurant to make whatever food it is that we want. Like, that's the kind of rich that we are. We're the kind of rich that not only do most of us have cars, we actually have houses for our cars. My car parks in a warm shelter with a roof and a cement floor and siding and all these things. My car has a better standard of living than a significant portion of the world, and that's a sad thing if I don't keep the right perspective, and it's probably sad anyway. A lot of us, we not only have jobs that we get to go to, that we get to earn a living, we get to do that. Sometimes they'll actually pay us to not come. It's this crazy thing called paid vacation where they're like, go ahead, don't come to work and we're going to keep paying you the same way. We are, by any measurement, some of the richest people in the world and some of the richest people in the history of the world. But we lose the perspective of that because instead of doing that, we look at the people down the street and we look at what they have and we look at what they drive and we look at their house and all of a sudden we don't feel that contentment because our perspective is off. I have a very nice Amish-built shed. I love that shed. It put all my kids' stuff that used to be in my garage in the shed, and it got it out of there, right? So it's very nice. I can park my car in the garage. And I had the nice shed, and then my neighbor moved in February, and he built his own shed, which, first of all, got me a lot of grief from my kids about my, like, inadequacy as a man. I was like, if I could build sheds, you think I would have been a pastor? So he built his own shed, and it's so nice. And he has electricity in his shed and all this stuff. And my kids are always like, his Tyler's shed is so much nicer than yours. I'm like, that's fine, because my shed was really nice before. And crazy enough, my shed isn't any less nice because my neighbor built a better shed. But we fail with that, and our perspective gets off. Our perspective is off. Last year, we did a series called Saying Grace, and it was all about gratitude. And I hope you remember this, because I think this is really important. I told you in that series that the Hebrew word for gratitude means recognizing the good. It means recognizing the good. It's the good that's already there. It's not the good that we don't have yet, the good that we want. It's recognizing the good that is there, and that leads to gratitude. But on the other hand, the opposite of contentment is comparison. Comparison wants to just sneak in and steal all of your contentment. And it will do that if you let that happen. Because any of us, at any point, we can find something to complain about, or we can find something to be thankful for. But the beautiful part of that is that we each get to choose. We get to choose how we're going to approach that. We get to choose what kind of people we're going to be. We get to choose if we're the kind of people that make it a matter of perspective and say, I'm going to get up every single day and focus on what I have, not on what I don't have. Which leads us to the third thing from Paul's passage right at the end, where we find that contentment is directly related to trusting God. He said, and my God will meet all your needs according to the riches of his glory in Christ Jesus. Do you believe that? Do you really believe that? I feel like I've talked a lot about trusting God recently. It turns out that's actually like a pretty big part of a spiritual journey of trying to walk with God and grow with him. But like it or not, these two things are always going to be tied. Because contentment will never be about what you have. It can't be about what you have. But it will be about whose you are. Because of all your needs, the most pressing, the most necessary need that you have is to know God and to be known by him. More than you need an iPhone X, more than you need a Nintendo Switch, more than you need a Lexus with a big red bow on it, you need a relationship with God where you know him, where he knows you, and where you trust him. You actually trust him to meet all your needs. Because that will be the ultimate perspective changer for our contentment. That's what allowed Paul to be content, whatever the circumstances. And by the way, the circumstances that he was writing this letter under were that he was wrongfully imprisoned for sharing about Jesus Christ. And so he wasn't writing this telling you to be content in any situation because he was on a cruise to Bermuda or because he was full from Thanksgiving dinner or because he was playing with a turbo train. Like, none of those things were true. He was writing it from prison saying, you can learn to be content, whatever the circumstances. But we miss that sometimes. We become complacent in our relationships with Jesus where we forget just how incredible what we've been given is. And Carolyn Hobbs has this very grounding quote where she says, sometimes we get so caught up in the future, we forget to take pleasure in what we have. We become so obsessed with I want, I want, I want, that there's no room left to notice that we are already standing neck deep in grace. Look around for a second. Experience that grace. Feel the grace that you are standing in this morning. Stop and just slow down. I'm not telling you don't ever think about the future, don't plan for the future. But what I am telling you is to just take pleasure in what you have right now. I'm telling you to slow down and enjoy this moment. Slow down and enjoy this stage of your marriage, your relationship. Slow down and enjoy this age of your kids. Slow down and enjoy this part of your career. Look around. And realize that we are all neck deep in the grace that God has given us. The God who created you, he also loves you. He's forgiven you, and he's given you an incredible amount of undeserved grace. And if that doesn't raise our level of contentment some, then we've really failed to understand just how important that is. Let me go back to Philippians 4, 11 through 13 real quick, because Eugene Peterson's translation of the Message, I just love how he kind of ties this middle section up. This is what he says Paul is saying in a modern sense. He says, actually, I don't have a sense of needing anything personally. I've learned by now to be quite content whatever my circumstances. I'm just as happy with little as with much as with little. I've found the recipe for being happy, whether full or hungry, hands full or hands empty, whatever I have, wherever I am, I can make it through anything in the one who makes me who I am. Because Paul knew contentment was about not what he had, but about whose he was. So let me ask you this. What is the one thing that is keeping you from contentment this morning? What is the thing that you've said, I will be content when blank? And here's why that matters. Hold on to that for a second. Because you've already told yourself this before. You told yourself, I will be content when I graduate from college, or I will be content once I'm married. I'll be content once I have kids. I'll be content when I have that job, or when I have that house, when I have this car, when I have that much money, when that's my net worth. I'll be content then. But now you're here, and you're saying it about something else. Now you've gotten to the finish line, but you've moved that finish line again and again and again. And if you don't make a decision today to stop doing that, you're going to keep doing that to yourself. You're going to keep moving that line, and if you don't decide to stop, you're just going to keep moving it again and again. So decide that you will be content in these circumstances. And I know that's a wide range for the people that are here this morning, but decide you will be content in these circumstances because it will not only change how you view what you have right now, it will fundamentally alter how you view what God gives you from this point forward. Because contentment is not about what I possess, but trusting God more and loving stuff less. Let's pray.
Thanks for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk with Jesus Christ. For more resources, visit our website at northgatefmc.com or download the Northgate app. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.